Hello, and welcome to Ride the Omnibus. I'm your host, Ariel Basca, and today I'm speaking with editor Hazel Bailey about her work on the series Silo, starring Rebecca Ferguson, on Apple Plus. First off, I would love to know how you found your way into the rhythms of Silo, because I think it's such a fascinating film. And every time you're editing sci-fi, there's always this really unique opportunity to create new rhythms.
Yes. Initially, especially with episode one, the first episode of any new TV series, is always tricky. That's one of the hardest parts, is finding that rhythm of what is the show, what is the feel of it. And obviously, I work very closely with the director and the other members of the teams and the showrunners and producers to, we talk about what we want to achieve, but sitting down and actually getting the rushes and working with them and molding them and building that rhythm initially is quite instinctive. I feel I like to view all the rushes as they're coming in and feel what are the actors doing, what's the cinematographer doing and the production designer doing, and almost let those rushes dictate that rhythm in a way. I don't like to just impose my own rhythm. I know some editors have a very distinct style where they kind of want to make everything really choppy or everything really slow paced. But I think that for me, it's about almost listening to the rushes and letting them kind of guide you, especially initially. And yeah. Does that answer?
Yeah, that answers it beautifully. And I wonder too, looking at the way that the character of Juliet Nichols is introduced is so fascinating, because it's maybe one of the most memorable introductions I've seen of a character on television in a very long time. And I love the way that you edited around some of the imagery of her. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about maybe the process of just developing that one sequence.
Mm-hmm. I think with the introduction of Juliet, it seemed to be that it was potentially going to be a challenge, because you've spent one episode with these two lead characters that you've really grown to love, and then they're basically gone. I mean, obviously Holston is in it too as a flashback, but so, yeah, introducing Juliet at the end of Act 1, obviously it's Rebecca Ferguson. So obviously everyone's excited to see Rebecca Ferguson, but you can't solely rely on the fact that, okay, well, it's Rebecca Ferguson, so everyone's going to want to watch this new character. It is a blow for the audience that they've lost their favourite characters in the first episode or beginning of the second episode. Yeah, we kind of wanted to really build her as a hero straight away. Yeah, we wanted to show her basically as a badass, like a strong woman repairing this generator, or I guess you don't know what she's doing at that point, but yeah, just to really give her an impact. And we even in the temp music, we kind of really ramped it up, and we were like, yeah, let's get some hero shots in there of her. Ram up and just be like, yes, this is a great person. You're going to want to watch her. Intriguing as well. You kind of want to know, like, what's she all about? She just looks great as well there. I mean,
she really does. And there's like a narrative arc, though, to that introduction that's really beautiful to see as it's crescendoing in terms of that final hero shot when the door closes and she's just standing there. And
yeah, I think that's it as well, because before we even meet her, we hear about her. Who's this person? Oh, there was an engineer, you know. And it's Hank who says, I can't remember the exact line, but he says something like, she keeps the whole silo running, something like that. And then they go down this long corridor, and yeah, the sound is getting more and more, and you're getting to see Mechanical for the first time. Which is just amazing, because the whole silo is beautiful and visually stunning and really interesting when you're learning about all these different parts. But it's almost like the the more down deep you go and the lower you go in the silo, just the more loud and noisy and kind of exciting it is. It's got a lot of energy. That's a really nice moment as well, as you're getting to go really, really down deep. Right down at mechanical is, well, I guess in episode two we go even deeper. But yeah, it was really important to introduce Juliet in a strong way, because not some shows do it, not many, and I know that Psycho, Alfred Hitchcock did it with Psycho, where he fell in love with a character and get to know a character and then got rid of them, and you're suddenly like, oh wait, what am I watching now? But yeah, you have to approach it very carefully.
I would imagine that created a lot of interesting obstacles in terms of the editing process too. Was there one sort of favorite obstacle that you had to work through in this process on this project?
I think, well, one challenge, I guess, is that you're setting up a new world with its own set of rules. And those rules become integral to the plot of the show. You have to figure out a way of drip feeding those to the audience and drip feeding that information to the audience without it feeling like they're being fed it. So you have to kind of be a bit more subtle, or you have to drop things in here and there. But it's an emotional story, especially Holston and Alison in episode one. It's a really emotional story. And for me, that was the most important thing, was that the audience emotionally connected with these characters. The silo is a character in itself and the backdrop for these stories. But it's important that we experience the silo through the people and learn about it through their stories, rather than just being told it verbally. And that was a challenge, but it was an enjoyable thing to figure out how to do that and how to get that information across without people feeling like they're being fed information.
Exactly. And like leaving little clues as to what makes this world so different in every frame. That seems like a particular challenge in general. Were there any subtleties that for you seemed to be indicative of the world as a whole that you were particularly proud of?
Well, I mean, one thing that we ended up discussing in the edit as we were creating the temp score, you know, obviously we don't start working with composers straight away in the edit. While we're building the show, we're often using temp soundtracks, temp score. Often we were using temp score from Atlee, our composer, anyway, because we knew that he was going to come on board. But so we were using a lot of his stuff, but a mixture of different soundtracks. But started experimenting a lot with vocal sounds and choral stuff, because in the script there was already this scene where they have a silo song and you hear that. But also, I think, you know, we don't have the luxury of recorded music in season one. We don't have bands and records, and we can't use commercial tracks. So yeah, I think all the sounds and the music that we spoke about should be quite organic and almost homemade. And we started working a lot with vocal sounds and almost choral sounds, because the silo in itself almost has like a, not religious feel, but it's got a soul. It's got its own religion in a way. And yeah, we started kind of experimenting with sounds using voices and whether they were stretched voices or changing things. And when Alison's going out, we spoke about it almost being like these sirens calling her out, because she's being drawn like a magnet to go out. She doesn't really know what's out there, but she can't not go and see. And I loved this idea that it's like this, yeah, the sirens calling her and the people that have gone before, or whoever is outside, if there is anyone, calling her and drawing her out. So I find that really interesting.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful image that conjures in so many ways in the series, as well as hearing you talk about it now. What was the thing that drew you to this project?
I think when I read episode one, I really engaged with Holston and Alison's story, but I did just really love that fact that you're setting up this whole world where you're doing it through these really interesting characters. And it's not, I mean, so much of sci-fi, you know, there's like aliens and robots and all this, and a lot of it can become about that. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just a different type. I'm really into dystopian drama. I worked on Black Mirror very early in my career, and I've always loved watching and reading dystopian novels. And I think it's that idea that it's so close to our own reality. It's not, I mean, it's a bit depressing, I guess, to think that, but it sometimes, you know, this could happen in a couple of years. And I just find that very relatable. Yeah, I just thought they were great characters, and I really wanted to explore that world and be a part of the show.
It's such a fabulous show, and it's such wonderful work that you're doing on it as well. And I just want to thank you so much for the work that you're doing on this show, and, you know, how powerful it is. And
yeah, no worries.
And I want to also just say really quickly, in terms of other work that you've done, you know, in the dystopian sphere, how does Silo compare for you to the other dystopian shows that you've worked on before?
I guess specifically with Black Mirror as a comparison, it's a less dark in a way. It's dark as an overall thing, but my Black Mirror episode, White Bear, was really dark.
White Bear was one of the darkest of the dark, for sure.
Yeah, and it was also back in the day when it was the very beginning. It was season two. It wasn't even on Netflix yet. It was, so at that point, it was the darkest one they'd ever done. There's probably some worse ones now, but it was so amazing to work on. But it was hard as well, because to watch someone and edit someone being chased and tortured and screaming every day for however many hours we'd be in the edit suite, that, you know, me and the director would both go home feeling a little bit sick and having nightmares.
Oh,
but,
my gosh.
Because I think your brain doesn't always know.
Yeah.
You can't tell what's real and what's. Whereas Silo was a dream to work on. I mean, I loved working on Black Mirror as well. But in terms of how dark Silo is, there's definitely sad moments. And I remember people would knock on my door of the edit suite while I was editing the cafeteria scene where Alison, just before she says she wants to go out. And they were coming in and be like, "Are you okay? You're like, what's wrong?" And I'm like, "I'm just editing a really sad moment." Because I get really emotionally connected and involved with characters, because that's how I get that emotion out of the audience. I have to feel it. The actor's feeling it in the moment. The editor has to feel it in order to portray it and make the best of it in the edit, so that the audience can feel those feelings. But you do put yourself through the ringer sometimes emotionally in the cutting room.
Yeah, but, it sounds pretty doubly traumatizing in a lot of ways. So
yeah, you just have to switch off when you go home and do something else.
Oh my gosh. And protect yourself within that as much as you can, I would imagine.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's worth it, because when people really connect with a show, that's what you're doing it for. I think on Silo in particular, actually, it's interesting because there's no exterior scenes. And often in an edit, you will use exterior scenes to give some space to let the audience have a moment of reflection, or if something heavy has just happened, give them a chance to take a pause, a breath, pull back. It's amazing what just going outside can do for an audience. And we don't have that luxury in the Silo. So we had to find ways to make you feel like you're going outside, or give the same feeling and the same pause without actually being able to physically show the sky or go into the open air. And that was something we spoke about a lot. We didn't want it to feel like you're just going from room to room, and we didn't want it to feel oppressive, like you're always in the darkness and you're always claustrophobic. So I think, you know, but I think we managed to achieve that through these big vistas of the silo that moves up and down, and they were very strategically placed. We didn't always know until we were in the edit, okay, now we're this is where we'll put a moment just in the stairwell, showing us where we are, or just moving through, showing more of the world. That was quite an organic thing that came with the rhythm while we were building the rhythm, where we felt we needed a breath and a pause. And especially in episode one, you want to show the silo so people understand where they are and how it works and how the floors work. And the class system, you know, up top is fancy and posh compared to down below, which is, you know, grimy and I guess a lower social class, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating the way that those layers do come through so clearly in that pilot episode. I can't imagine that was easy to construct.
No, I mean, we worked closely with the visual effects team as well, because we had to work on these things together. There had to be a lot of dialogue, because obviously we didn't build a massive silo to film in. So, you know, you have to talk about, right, what's going to go here? How much are we going to see? How far down do you get to see if you go at that angle? And how long should I hold this shot for? I need to know what is going to go into this shot to decide how long to hold it for. Because for me in the edit, I'm just looking at blue sometimes. So it's, but that's an interesting part of it as well. And we're all working with so much visual effects these days. And I think we all get used to it, the editors. I think having a really good communication with the visual effects team is so important.
That seems like it would be absolutely crucial. And, you know, to fill in the blanks in terms of what you're working with on your end would I imagine be very difficult sometimes without those communication clarities coming through. It's a very fascinating story, and I want to thank you so much for your time, and thank you for working on this and for being so candid with me and your observations. And
you're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. And thank you for taking a moment right now to reflect with me on the history of the land you are listening on now. Whether you are stuck in traffic or sitting in your office chair, take the time to look up whose traditional lands you are on now and what treaties govern those territories. I record this podcast on the site of land stolen from the Manahoac people. I am grateful to work on this land, and I acknowledge that we need to protect and honor the history of the indigenous people from other tribal nations that have made innumerable contributions around the world. I share this in the hope that my listeners may join me in honoring our past, present, and future. Without this land, this earth, and each other, we are nothing. Before I go, please take 30 seconds now to leave us a 5-star review by clicking on Support the Show in the show notes. We don't want your money, we want your words. A simple RTO rocks my socks expands our reach and helps us keep bringing you great content. And connect with us on Instagram and Twitter, where we are at Omnibus Ride. You can also visit our website, omnibusride.com, where you can go to dive deeper into our content and learn more about the show. A special thank you to our amazing editor, William Dass. We truly couldn't do what we do without him or Danielle. Be well, be safe, and keep in touch.